Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for March 9th, 2009, and on this week's episode, we have an interview with Dorothy Milne from Lifeline Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so let's get ready and let's talk theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I thought after 150 podcasts and almost a little over 3 years, it was time to revisit the lady who was our initial podcast. She's from Lifeline Theater, and it is Dorothy Milne. Hello, Dorothy.
Hello, Tom.
Thank you for initiating what is turning out to be a really popular thing that it's been such a joy for me to be able to meet and talk to so many theater people. And it's just so great to have you back. And after the interview, my gosh, what a body of work you guys have been producing.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm delighted to get to talk again and always so happy to talk about what we're doing at Lifeline.
Well, tell us about your latest gem.
Mariette in Ecstasy. It's based on the book by Ron Hanson. It's a contemporary novel, but it's set in the turn of the century convent in Canada, and it's an unusual show for Lifeline. It's a quiet life that we are depicting on stage, and a young nun comes to the convent, and she's young and beautiful and charismatic, and when she starts to experience miracles, the community divides over whether she's a saint or a fraud or a crazy lady. And it's an interesting study, I think, of how a celebrity affects a community and how divisive that can be. And I think it's also a very interesting exploration of what it is to be spiritual as well.
And it's a mystery.
And it's a mystery.
Because we never really come to grips with, is she a fraud?
What really happened.
Is the stigmata real? I mean, I guess it's real because it happened, but and the approach that you guys took. Who was the adapter?
Christina Calvet is the adapter, and she is a long, long time company member and has done much wonderful work here at Lifeline, starting from her first one here, which was Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Pride and Prejudice, Jane Eyre.
I saw Jane Eyre.
Yeah, she's awesome. Done all sorts of work here and is one of our finest writers. And she was paired with Elise Kozlarik. And this is her first main stage directing job for us.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah.
Kudos to her.
I know. Didn't she just rock it?
Yeah.
I just really think from everything from, you know, in the sound design, they used some microphones in our space that gives the sound of sort of a cavernous, echoey space.
Yes, it did. And I was trying to figure out how you did that.
In our little tiny space. Well, that's sound designer Tim Hill.
And the music was very accurate. I'm old enough to remember the old Catholic where they were singing in the Latin and they did a lot of the chants.
Yes, and that was developed between Elise, the director, and the music director, all those.
How about the set design?
That's Alan Donahue.
Wow.
He's a company member long-term as well, and he certainly has done stunning work for us in the past, and this, you know, it's another one of his marvels.
Sort of it's a church effect, and yet it's a convent effect,
mm-hmm.
and even in the back and on your smaller set, but you go up high. So you have mm-hmm. the cells that the nuns lived in, and it's really,
yeah,
really
it's very textural, has a lot of depth to it, and as often our design team is able to pull off, I think it makes our space look big even though we are small.
Yeah, it does. It's nice that it's high.
Yeah, we have a lot of height. We have more height than most companies, I think.
And you're not afraid to use it either.
Oh, no, we'll dangle you from the rafters if we need to.
If we need to. Well, and some of the people in the show, tell us about some of them, because you have some of the, I know you have Brian Perry, who's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he wonderful? Yeah. It's a great joy to have him. He's one of the only two men in the show. The other one is Shoal Milos from our company.
Right.
And then nine women. And playing the nuns of the convent. And Brenda Barry is Mariette, the young newcomer to convent life. And we are just so thrilled and wowed by what she's been able to bring to this. And we have several regulars at Lifeline here in the show as well. Katie McLean in our company. Allison Kane is a regular with us. And then Melinda Mooneyhan has been in several shows with us. And
yeah, you have quite an excellent stable of women actors that are very strong. And they can play multiple roles. They're excellent in accents.
Oh, yeah. And we have two dialect coaches in the company.
Oh, that helps.
Elise Kuzlerik and Phil Timberlake, who's
that's right, they both
teaches,
are.
You know.
And they're two of the more articulate actors around.
Yeah, and I think what's remarkable about this production is how, I mean, certainly, you know, I had some anxiety as we planned to do this, was, you know, is anybody going to come to see a play that takes place in a convent about a bunch of nuns? And it is so human and full of humor and just real, just the humor that is mined from real people in an unusual situation.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, and what?
Not that I'm saying it's a big laugh-o right. comedy, but there are well, plenty of real human laughs
there
in
are,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The,
yeah.
Particularly with the young novitiate nuns. And how they react to the newcomer,
right?
But the deeper topic, the lady I brought with me was Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't have. I was raised a Catholic. I'm kind of a recovering Catholic, so I was kind of familiar with all it. But so I asked her. I said, "Well, how do you think this will play with Jewish people?" There, and she thought it was wonderful. She had read the book, and she says, "You know, this is not only a Catholic phenomenon." She says the Jewish Kabbalah has. These kinds of things happen, certainly in mm-hmm. the Hindus in India. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those holy men that have these, and the Buddhist monks. So it's a very universal type theme.
I really think it is, too. And I was not raised Catholic, so it's funny when we talk about the costume pieces and everything, and there's all these words I don't know, and I don't know what's a wimple and what's a veil and what's a habit, and as they try to talk about elements of it, I'm lost. But as far as the themes of it, I think it's very universal, and I think anybody who has any desire to explore spirituality would find it very interesting, and of any type. And I think also this sense of community and what keeps it together and what disrupts
well,
it
I mean,
is
yeah,
also.
It's this cloistered nunnery, but it could be a very small rural town, too.
It could be, yeah, any group of intimate relationships.
And what I like about the young lady that played the lead was it. I know it was written, the part was written, so you don't really know if she's a fraud or not. So the adaptation really worked, and her acting, you leave the show with enough evidence to argue either side.
It's true. And I don't remember a show that this has been so much the case where it, you know, it ends, the audience claps, and then they sit there. And they sit there and they don't leave.
Yeah.
And everybody's talking afterwards, and people, you know, discuss and argue all the possibilities. And I think it really leaves people excited and talking about stuff.
And that's such a valid role of theater. I mean, you get away from all the hassles that are going on in the world mm-hmm. today, and you go into another world for a couple of hours, and you're so affected by it, you don't want to leave, and you're talking about it. Wow, that's the power that I think only live theater can do. And you guys got to be really proud of this show.
We are really tickled with it.
I think it's one of the best things you've done. I know Chris Jones said
he thought
it was the best thing that you guys have done.
Yeah, I think that is very likely true. I mean, we're proud of all of them, and they're great in different ways. But I really think this has is a very powerful show.
And it's such a tough show to do. And you guys made it work from every element. So, folks, do not miss it. Give a little commercial now where you're at and what days the show's running and so forth.
Well, I hope you'll all come and see Mariette and Ecstasy up at Lifeline Theater. We're on the far north side of Chicago in Rogers Park in the Glenwood Avenue Arts District. Our address is 6912 North Glenwood Avenue. We're just a half block from the Morse stop on the Red Line. And we hope you will come and visit us. Our box office number is 773-761-4477.
Great. Now let's talk about some of the shows you've done in the past. Since the last time I interviewed you that you're proud of. One of the shows I really, really like is Mark of Zorro.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, we had a ball with that.
And you actually remounted it.
We did. It did real well here, and we extended it for 5 weeks here, I think. And then, you know, the next season is coming in. And there was there have been many shows that I would have loved to move to a next location. But there aren't that many rental facilities in Chicago, and the ones that they are there book up a year in advance. So by the time you know you have a hit, there's nowhere to go. And so there was just this really flukish opening at the theater building, and we were able to seize upon it, and we ran it there for 9 weeks, September through November.
How well did it do there?
You know, it did well. I was proud of it production-wise, and we're really glad we did it. It's harder to sell a show away from your home site than we figured it would be.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we were like, oh, we'll just move it there, and then a bunch of new people will come. But I think I have underestimated the enthusiasm of our mailing list, because when we send out a postcard, you know, Lifeline's audiences storm the gate.
That's
and
true,
when
yeah.
a theater building, we went, okay, we'll just send out a postcard to their mailing list. And we were like, oh, their mailing list maybe doesn't know who we are. And so the response is not as vigorous. But
you broke a new ground. So
we did. Yeah. 2,000 people saw the show, and most of them have never been to Lifeline. And several of them, anecdotally, came straight up and saw Dorian Gray. So we feel like we were really glad we went.
Yeah, because it's you don't often get the opportunity to expand.
No, it's rare.
That's something
so
for
other
theater groups that have either their own space or that – the like only rent one space, like some of those
mm-hmm.
at the greenhouse,
mm-hmm.
That sometimes you're better off going into another place and kind of expanding.
We're really glad we did it.
Yeah,
we're really glad. And we felt like we connected with new audiences.
Well, let's talk about Dorian Gray. I thought you did a fabulous job on it. And where you came up with the young man to play Dorian Gray, because anyone knows the show knows that he's got to be young-looking.
Young and beautiful
young
and be able to do the part.
And do the part, yeah, that's
well,
all.
Well, Nick Vidal was great in the show, and I believe he's only 21. And he's somebody, Kevin Tice, the director who has worked with us several times, knew from somewhere, and he was one of the people called in, and he just, you know, wowed everybody. And that one was, speaking of talented Kozlerics, that one was adapted by Robert Kozlerik, who's married to Elise, who directed Mariette and Ecstasy. So
it's a little family connection.
we have some family.
Well, Robert's been involved on a lot of areas, right?
Yes, yes. And with most of us at Lifeline wear multiple hats, but certainly he's an actor and an adapter, and he's going to direct for us probably next season. So.
Great. And the last one I want to talk about is The Island of Dr. Moreau, which I thought was fabulous. Now, that one of the things that made that was the costuming.
Kimberly Morris.
I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's a wonderful designer.
Got a few Jeff Awards on that show.
Yes. Oh, we did. We got a slew of them. It was exciting. And that was adapted. That was also adapted by Rob Kozlerik. It was directed by Paul Holmquist, who's one of the youngest members of our ensemble. And I just thought his work was great. And R&D choreography did a lot of the, all the fight stuff. It was one of those shows where every 45 seconds, there was another piece of violence. So they were busy.
Yeah. And the costuming alone, these were tell us a little about what kind of the costumes would be.
The masks were pretty incredible. And Kimberly has such experience that, you know, she knows 14 different ways to make masks that are malleable and are shaped to the actor's face and whatnot. And of course, the one we could afford, we did the method we could afford, and they worked just really stunningly.
But they were like, these were based on experiments where these animals.
Animals that have been operated on and in hopes of giving them human qualities. Dr. Murrow has the idea that he's going to improve mankind and he's going to start with animals. So he's a scary, scary man.
Yeah, very
so
scary.
He's there on this island, you know, torturing these animals and trying to teach
them.
I
don't remember the count, but how many different masks? Because you had different, you know, some were part. A bear and a
bear and puma. Well, there was the big one was a bear ox combination, and trying to humanize him. And there's a puma and a gorilla, or an ape man, half you know half and half, and all sorts of
leopards and tigers.
Yeah, it was great movement work that Paul had them all do. They were so. That was another thrilling show to watch, just from a visual.
Yeah,
perspective and emotional too, because you know it really taps into, you know, how animals work hard to do what what they're supposed to do, and yeah. And this crazy man is trying to make them try to be human, something they're not designed to be.
Yeah, that was
cool. Lots of good questions about what is humanity or what is being human when the humans weren't acting very humane. And
yeah, and it turns out who's more brutal?
Exactly. Yeah.
Nothing worse than man in terms of brutality.
Nothing worse than man. Yeah.
But so this has been quite a run for you guys. So let's talk about the process, because one of the things you guys do, you're the only theater group I know that exclusively takes novels or document books, mm-hmm. and adapts them for the stage.
Yes.
I don't know of anyone else. There's other people who've done it here and there, but you guys exclusively do it. And you have this crew of people who are the adapters. Some are directors. Some do lighting. Some are actors. And then they all sort of blend in. How in the world do you make that work without, like, killing one another after a while? I mean, you have that many creative people.
Well, we have an artistic ensemble of 20. And you're right, there are all those different things. We're designers and directors and writers and actors, and most folks wear more than one hat or are encouraged to try on a different hat that they haven't had before.
That's
because
good.
We are able to support each other in new ventures and outside the company, too. Certainly, many folks have gotten first-time experiences with us because we have enough people of experience in place that we can support somebody who's sort of new to directing or new to doing an adaptation. We have a feedback process that isn't about, you know, those can be risky, those feedback processes. And sometimes I think in other places, I've certainly seen them go wrong in that everybody is trying to go, this is the play you should write because it's the play I would write if I was doing it.
Yeah.
And I think we work really hard here to look at what somebody's doing and go, huh, I think I see what you're going for there. I think you could define that muscle more right over there. I'm not clear on what you're doing. Clarify that. I mean, that we work
so
hard.
So it's supportive
trying to take over.
Yeah, not the egos. Get the ego out of the way.
Yeah, we want to support your vision. And that can be a little brain freeze there, but we want to support what the creative team's going for. And so they have to be buffeted by all of our feedback. But the truth is they don't have to take any of it. What the creative team does is listens and listens and thinks, oh, thank God for that idea. What a great idea. And they hear something else and go, that doesn't fit my vision. So I'm not going to
do that
one. All right,
let's go step back. The selection of the play.
Well.
The selection of the book that you're going to adapt into a play. How does that work?
People bring books into, people suggest things to us all the time. And we check those out. And then the folks that are the writers in the company often bring things in and go, I'd be really interested in doing this. And,
So someone champions.
Yeah.
Initially.
If a book comes in that everybody thinks is kind of cool, but there's not a leader behind it, it has a tendency to languish because you got to have somebody who's going, I'm gonna drive this train,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, you got to have somebody passion. And all great creative things have somebody with passion behind it.
That, yeah, and then you also have to research the rights and everything. Certainly many things we'd like to do, you can't get the rights to do it. But you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there, so we keep finding
so
things.
So somebody champions a work, then what mm-hmm. happens? So you have this passionate person who's always waving it in front of you. And is
right, and then we all read it, and okay. they usually, you know, I certainly have a hard time knowing whether I'm in favor of something or not until I've heard them talk a little bit about what they're thinking about for it. Because very often, certainly with Island of Dr. Moreau and Dorian Gray and Mariette and Ecstasy, I read those and went, well, I would not begin to know how to tackle this.
Okay.
But the folks that are passionate about it go, this is what I'm thinking. And then you go, oh, okay, I don't have to know how to do it because you do. And I believe in that artist. I believe in this team of artists.
So the lighting person and the set designer, they're all saying, they all have a vision. And all of a sudden, now you're starting to see it come alive
right.
from print.
Right. And it usually starts with the writer. We've had books brought in by designers going, I want to design this. who wants to write it? And
okay,
and
cool.
we've certainly started some projects that way. It's most commonly it's the writer that starts it. And we don't get involved with who's the lighting designer and stuff until later down the road. But since we do have those designers in the company, we are getting the benefit of their perspective in the script discussion or the book discussion.
I'm sure that helps, yeah.
Oh, it is such
a... It saves you such going down the wrong road and wasting a lot of time
right.
and money.
Right, it is such a wonderful thing to us that we have a scenic designer and a lighting designer, a costume designer, and a sound designer in the company.
Yeah.
And even though they might only do one show a year with us and work elsewhere for our other shows, their input on the season selection and talking about things is... And supporting productions as they develop is really great.
Wow. So now then the adapter he gets the green light, and there's a vision, and
mm-hmm.
he then adapts it.
Right.
Now, assuming when you get rights, like, for example, your latest show, isn't the playwright, the novelist coming?
He is. He's coming on March 14th.
Okay.
And what's funny is he's actually... came on our first preview weekend as well. He had a conference in town.
Oh.
And he came over. You know, we do two weekends of previews,
yeah,
because it's always a new script. We do a lot of changes. We're doing line changes. We're taking scenes in and out still sometimes. And so he came first preview weekend. And
that
everyone
had to be
frightening.
Like,
oh, no. But the show was in very good shape, and he was very excited about it. And so we're excited to have him come back. Now it's all polished and shiny. But he saw a good show then and was very enthusiastic about it, too.
That's got to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they well, let's talk about getting rights for a minute. Is it – I know it varies, obviously, by the writer, but is it generally fairly easy, or is it a tough process?
Well, that's project by project. I mean, somebody you know, you would think that it would be hard to get the rights for Kurt Vonnegut or for J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
But the Tolkien estate – is so powerful that they can sell the movie rights and still keep the stage rights separate. So when I go to them and say, we want to do this,
yeah.
or when we did those three books of The Lord of the Rings in advance of the movies coming out.
And they weren't worried at all.
And the yeah. movie deal had been made, and they still had the power to separate it. Where as a younger author, you know, they're eager to have it sold for film rights. And so they don't feel like they have the power to go separate out the stage rights or whatever. Whereas, you know, Kurt Vonnegut, when he was alive, you know, he and his agent were just like, yeah, we'd love to have you do it. You sound like a good company. What can you afford to pay us? That's fine. You know, I mean,
good.
You know, so it's sometimes it's super easy and you wouldn't expect it to be from these giants of literature. And
so I guess the lesson there is ask.
Yes, always ask. And
you
sometimes
can't assume either way there. Right?
Yeah. No, you really can't. Yeah, but sometimes it's just impossible, and sometimes it's hard to even figure out who owns the rights when something's been out for a while. It's not public domain, but
yeah.
you know, the publisher no longer has it, and the you know, it's sometimes a super sleuth process to track it down.
So all right, so now we've got We've got the adaptation pretty much written.
Uh-huh.
I realize in a work of theater, it's never done till it's done.
That's true. We do a few drafts. We're giving feedbacks. Yeah.
So now you bring the creative team. And again, you still always have either the adapter or the director or both of them that are now driving the ship, right?
Yeah, we try to get the adapter hooked up with the director as soon as or before sometimes the project is green-lighted. I mean, sometimes, you know, we know who that's going to be if it goes even beforehand because those people are like, we want to do this together. And then as soon as we know we're doing a project and know when we're doing it, we try to hire a production team then so that they can be as involved as they want to be in script development. Because certainly, sometimes a light or a sound effect or whatever can completely change what you need to say.
Yeah,
and so having them involved from the process from the beginning is really
valuable. Well, I can tell you in your latest show, after I did my review, I was curious because I had not read the book. So I read a couple of book reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I figure that's the best way to find out how good, you know, the adaptation was to the and I read two book reviews that were they could have been reviews of your show. When they talked about, you know, what happened and what the book was about and it went into detail, it was your play.
Oh, that's great. So well, we pride ourselves on being very faithful to the text and tone of our source material at the same time as I think we're fairly unconventional in how we stage things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us what you have coming up now. What's in the pipeline? Can you give us any scoops?
You know, I don't think I'm allowed to yet because our
well.
And there's a few things that are not decided, so I probably shouldn't say and then be wrong.
Yeah.
But we're going to know very soon all about next season.
But the rest of this season?
Oh, well, the rest of this season. No, that's not. That we know, happily.
Okay.
Next coming up for our kids series opening March 14th is Mrs. Piggle Wiggle, based on the popular books by Betty McDonald from the 40s and the 50s. We did, actually, it's a remount because we did it 10 years ago. But, you know, the script's been tweaked some, and we've added a couple songs and
you know,
and
you,
whatnot.
You guys are really famous for your children's shows. And I've talked
we
to...
We give them the same...
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of women who, since I'm older, they're older, but their daughters or their sons have been taking their kids, you know, their grandkids, to these shows for years. You guys are very well known for that.
Well, we've been here 26 years, and for 21 of those, we've also been doing kids shows. So, yeah, we have had generations come through there, really. And we give the kids shows as much focus and production as we... It's the same artists that are leading those projects, and we're very excited about that work, too.
Plus, it's scary with kids because they don't know how to be anything but totally honest, right?
Well,
if they don't like it, they'll say so, won't they?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny. I mean, certainly there are, you know, there are some shows in our adult series that you go, oh, that's not appropriate for kids because it might be kind of scary or it might be this or that. But I really like having the kid audiences, and I really like the fact that so many people bring young people. Many of our adult shows, many are suitable for ages 10 or more, you know, and
sure.
Because we tend to be physical in our staging and we tend to be use a storytelling style, you know, we don't like just talking heads,
right?
And so we like the fact that we're doing adult shows that young people find engaging too.
Yeah. So you're introducing theater to kids, entertaining them,
mm-hmm.
and teaching them the power of the stage. So that's mm-hmm. great. And I understand those shows don't hurt the bottom line. The children's show.
Well, you know, we make our money on the grown-up shows.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, we're only charging $12 a ticket for the kids' shows, and it's 99 seats, and we're charging $30 a ticket for the grown-up shows. So, actually, our big money is made on the grown-up show.
Okay.
But we have a passion for the children's work, and, you know.
And you're very well known for that.
Yeah.
When I first started reviewing, everyone was telling me how great your children's shows were.
Yeah.
And, of course, I didn't see one of those early, but I saw one of your adult shows and have been a major fan ever since.
Oh, yeah. Well, our last adult show of the season is Busman's Honeymoon, which is Francis Limoncelli is adapting.
Okay.
And Paul Holmquist, who directed Island of Dr. Moreau for us, is directing. And that is the, I'm thinking, fourth Dorothy L. Sayers adaptation.
Oh, I love those mysteries. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the one where Harriet and Lord Peter finally get together, go on a honeymoon, and of course they find a corpse.
Uh-oh.
So
those folks, those mysteries, there's nothing like a great mystery on stage, especially people that really know how to do them. Yeah. And you guys do a great job with those. And this is the fourth one.
This is the fourth one. And I think, they're so well written. They're great as comedies. They're great as far as the characters. You know, you just feel like they're real people.
Oh, yeah. And you get to know them. Yeah.
You get to know them. And
same actors playing?
Yes. It is Peter Greenberg and Jennifer Tyler, who are married in real life. And
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they are playing Peter and Harriet again. And I think it will be great fun. And as always with her stuff, you know, there's a lot of comedy, but there's a lot of really interesting themes that are still topical about, you know, what do you give up when you enter a relationship? As you become partnered with somebody, how much of yourself do you lose? And, you know, all
That's
those
true.
Things are being explored.
The other thing I like about them is how your ensemble each play five and six different roles. They can leave stage as the butler and come back a minute later as a villain or something. And what a challenge for the ensemble.
Well,
players.
Certainly that is the case in many of our shows. I'm trying to think this one might be a play where we have only one person play each part.
That's rare for you guys.
It is very rare for us. So it's going to be notable in that way because you're right. We've often got people playing just legions of people.
It's a great training ground for actors.
Yeah.
Plus, it's a great place to you know, do your craft.
Well, you know, it saves us money, but also I think it's more fun to do three exciting different parts than sit backstage playing cards for half the show.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And any actor would
we
say
wanna,
that. Sure.
You know, we always want to be busy.
Sure. Last question, and it's kind of a general question. In this down economy, I know you guys are doing well, And I've noted that a lot of the Chicago theaters theater companies are still holding on. How do you see, you know, the immediate future with theater?
Well, I mean, certainly we are in very scary, scary times. But I also think that you need entertainment in scary times. And we're affordable entertainment compared to a lot of things. And so I'm hopeful that we're gonna do okay. I mean, certainly, you know, these are it's a great unknown out there. We're doing okay so far, and hopefully we'll continue to survive and bring some pleasure to people.
I believe my theory is the strong theaters who do good work, that have a reputation, are going to survive. And you guys certainly fall into that category.
Well, I certainly that's very nice to hear. And it's funny though, because I look back over the past decade and I think, look at the fine companies with great work that weren't able to go on. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
And I go, there is no discredit to their reputation. This is a hard business to make a living in.
Well, I think one of the things is your leadership. I think you should take a little pat on the back for that.
And thank you.
The idea that you guys get along so much as an ensemble, which you know, you guys will cut corners. You got people that aren't afraid to step in and do other things. So you don't always have to hire someone from outside. And obviously the you guys have to get along. A lot of these groups, you know, self-destructive, as you and I both know.
Well, you know, I mean, getting along with other people is the lifelong challenge for all of us.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially when you're working on, you know, a creative project everybody's passionate about. But, you know, there's 20 people in our artistic ensemble, but we hire 150 artists a year because, you know, we're one or two people in the artistic ensemble is attached to each production and everything else is hired out. So so we're all busy and we're all involved, certainly, but there's a lot. We are always bringing in fresh blood from the outside. I think another thing that's been good for us of late is the development of the Glenwood Avenue Arts District in our neighborhood.
This is a cool area.
The addition of Boho Theater and Theo Ubique that are just a block away from us.
And doing good work.
Great work. They're really smaller, younger companies, but Boho is certainly younger. Theo Ubique has been around for a while, but they are both making some big noise in the world. And getting a lot of great press attention and Jeff attention.
Heartland cafes down the street too.
Yes. And they are, Michael James from the Heartland is associated with Theo Ubique as well. But yes, certainly we have some terrific music venues in the neighborhood.
Yes, you do.
And several new restaurants. And I think we're becoming a destination that's really exciting.
Well, that's great. And I want to thank you so much. This has been a terrific update. And keep up the good work, because
folks, you
got to see the. If it's Lifeline Theaters, one of those theaters, if you see they have a new show, call up, order tickets, and after you do that, then ask them what the name of the show is, because it doesn't make any difference, because their work is that strong. You will get your money's worth and be entertained.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, and folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of March 9th, 2009. Looking Glass Theater has announced its 2009-2010 season, featuring the world premieres of three Looking Glass productions. The season includes Phaedra, Queen of Haiti, written by J. Nicole Brooks and directed by Laura Eason, that will run from September 30th through November 15th, and it will also be Looking Glass's 51st world premiere. Next is Icarus, adapted and directed by artistic director David Catlin, that will show from December 9th through January 24th of next year. And to conclude the season, Trust, written by Andy Bellin and David Schwimmer. The show will also be directed by David Schwimmer, and that can be seen starting March 3rd through May 9th of next year. Subscriptions to the Looking Glass 2009-2010 season are currently on sale. For more information, click on our links at theaterinchicago.com. The producers of Xanadu have announced that the production will be closing at the end of the month, this March 29th. It's playing at the Drury Lane Theater Water Tower Place, and now you only have a few more weeks left to see the show before it heads over to Tokyo. That's right, I said Tokyo. Tickets are still available. Follow the links on our website for more information. Honored playwright Horton Foote passed away Wednesday at the age of 92 in Hartford, Connecticut, just a few days before his 93rd birthday. He was the 1995 Pulitzer Prize winner for his play, The Young Man from Atlanta. Horton Foote had a great relationship with the Goodman Theater, which presented a retrospective of his work last year. He originally got into playwriting on a suggestion from choreographer Agnes DeMille, who told him to write what you know. Horton Foote is another great artist that will be sorely missed. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Dorothy Milne for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.